from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At the height of the MTV 80s, Michelle Schacht went way off the rails of the pop music mainstream with a soulful, roots-rocking album, Short, Sharp, Schacht, that foretold the singer-songwriter boom to come. Her songs shared stories of growing up hard in East Texas, of struggles inside and out, of innocence and injustice and wonder. Michelle Schacht carried the torch for the blues, the traveling minstrel, the uprooted outsider. Defying record label disapproval, she then moved on to Texas swing, gospel, and hip-hop-flavored funk. Now, after a decade-long fight with her label for creative freedom and ownership, Michelle Schacht is free at last, newly divorced, a born-again Christian, and the CEO of her own Mighty Sound Records. Tonight on Point, Michelle Schacht is still making trouble, and it sounds pretty good.
It was another situation as the train left the station. It was hello, Bill, I need a vacation. Now the world's been cruel. This time she really let me down. I thought I'd go back to school, yeah, try to clean up this town.
Joining me now from Los Angeles is Michelle Schacht, songwriter, inveterate rabble-rouser, and CEO of Mighty Sound Records. She's out with a re-release of her 1988 album, Short, Sharp, Schacht. And this time she owns it. Good evening and welcome, Michelle Schacht.
Hey, Tom, you forgot Hellraiser.
Oh, Hellraiser. Oh, hell, let's not forget that. It's great to have you, and you're in some kind of a liberation phase here, Michelle Schacht.
I am regeneration and rejuvenation and well, you know how they say war is good for business. It's really good for the folk singing business. So my services are needed. I'm here to save the day.
You're here to save the day. Now update us. You're back out with Short, Sharp, Schacht, and this after 15 years now, 15 pretty tumultuous years. Why are you bringing this back out?
Well, here's the way I want to tell the story, and since you're asking me, I had negotiated a very extraordinary deal as a young artist where I turned down the money. I said, keep the money. I don't want your money. I want the rights. I want the ownership. And about halfway into the contract, they came to me and said, you cut too good a deal for yourself, young lady, and we want those rights back. And if you don't, and the consequences were kind of unspoken, but they were, in fact, what took place was for the next 5 years, I was in this wilderness kind of wandering through the legal charts and channels of the American landscape. And so I finally defended those rights. But, you know, it's funny, the way I want to explain this, and I don't know if it's really gotten understood well, is I had a choice. I could have just gone with the program. I could have given them the rights back and kind of kept their monopoly on artists' catalog intact. But I had broken away from the pack as a young artist, and I made a stand on principle to fight for those rights that I had won for myself. And, yeah, it cost me 5 years of my career. But the good news is here I am 15 years later in a very good position to reissue my masters, have them all in print under my own Mighty Sound label, and with all the creative direction and packaging that I choose. So it's a lot of power, and I think there's a point or a moral in there for young artists somewhere.
Hang with it. I mean, them trying to get Michelle Schacht to go with the program, talk about a hopeless cause. I mean, if anybody won't go with the program, I guess it's you. And I mean, you pulled out every big gun in the book, including suing them on the 13th Amendment, the grounds of enslavement, basically, for keeping you in that country. We'll get to that, but we want to hear some of this music, and I want to ask you, as you pull some back out of that songbook, and I hope you'll be thinking, you've got your guitar there, about playing Memories of East Texas for us, but do you still, can you still, in 2003, inhabit these songs the way you did in 1987, 1988?
Of course. I mean, these were written as timeless classics. I'm sorry to be quite so confident about the quality of the work, but the musical values that are in them are timeless. Details about the place that you're speaking from. You've got to come from a place as a writer, and that's what these songs do.
Before you give us Memories of East Texas, set it up just a little bit for us, your childhood there.
Well, my stepfather was in the Army. And I'd spend the summers with my father, but my mother lived way back in East Texas. Gilmer is called the town. Well, really, Kelsey is the town next to Gilmer, but Kelsey's so small, nobody, you can't even find it on the map. Gilmer is right between Shreveport and Dallas, so people can find it if they look. And I had been, unlike most of the people there, I'd been out of the county in my lifetime. And so I just never really fit in. When I moved there at 15, I was already, you know, an outsider and never really destined to fit in. But this particular song, I think, characterizes something a lot of people can relate to. If you can think back to the first time you drove a car.
Let's hear it. Memories of East Texas, Michelle Shaw.
Memories of East Texas, pine green rolling hills, covered in the springtime with golden daffodils, rowing on Sandy Lake come April, harvesting hay in June, sitting by the road watching wildfires burn by an old October moon. I learned to drive on those East Texas red clay back roads, and I mean to tell you, my friends, they weren't no easy roads. You had to watch out for all the curves down by Kelsey Creek, and detour through the Lindsay's pasture when the water ran too deep. Memories of East Texas and Gilmer, county seat of Upshur. Looking back and asking myself, what the hell did you let them break your spirit for, girl? You know, their lives ran in circles so small, they thought they'd seen it all. And they could not make a place for a girl who'd seen the ocean. I learned to drive on those East Texas red clay back roads, and I mean to tell you, my friends, they weren't no easy roads. No, no, you had to watch out for all the curves down by Kelsey Creek, and detour through the Lindsay's pasture when the water ran too deep. Of East Texas and those piney green rolling hills, covered in the springtime with those wild daffodils, sitting in those piney woods and playing my guitar, thinking back on the roads I come, thinking I had not come that far. I learned to drive on those East Texas red clay back roads, and I mean to tell you, my friends, no, they weren't no easy roads. You had to watch out for all the curves down by Kelsey Creek, detour through Lindsay's pasture when the water ran too deep.
Michelle Shocked. Yeah, I guess you still inhabit that song pretty well, Michelle.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I haven't been back there in, what, 25 years?
Wow.
But it's not about being there. It's about remembering that place.
It sure is. You know, this line, the detour through Lindsay's pasture, as a bona fide one-time farm kid myself, that I see that so clearly. You know, there's
All
something
right.
across the road, and you just detour where you detour.
Come on, Tom. I know your listeners would like to hear about your first time.
No.
It was a tractor, wasn't it? It was a tractor. Admit it.
No,
it was a,
well, sure, 12. But that didn't count. It wasn't until you got the pickup truck, right?
Uh-huh.
But the Michelle Schacht story really lives, it seems to me, in this line, looking back and asking myself, what the hell did you let them break your spirit for? You mentioned your father and the time you would spend with him. And he took you into the company of musicians, bluesmen Big Bill Brunsey, Lead Belly, and songwriters Guy Clark and Randy Newman. But the scene back in Gilmer in East Texas was not like that. What's the breaking the spirit? You ran away or left home anyway in 1977. You were 16. Why did you leave? What was sending you packing?
I say it like this now, that I was following my instincts. And because of the path that my life has taken from following those instincts, I've come up with a pretty pithy little summary of my philosophy about instincts, if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
I say, you know, instincts are a gift. We all receive instincts when we're young, when we need them the most. We receive these instincts. But a lot of times the courage to follow our instincts we sometimes mistakenly refer to as talent. It's like the country boys. He was heading off for the big city. And remember that movie Hair? Mm. And his dad says, son, God takes care of the fools. It's the clever ones that have to look after themselves.
So the courage to follow instincts, Michelle Schacht, you're saying sometimes mistaken for talent.
Mm-hmm. But I believe all young people have instincts and most of them end up with the courage that they need to live up to those instincts.
I've heard a story of you sitting in church. Your mother was a fundamentalist Mormon. And her sort of, I don't know, testifying before the congregation in ways that made you awfully uncomfortable. Can you
that really hurt
that?
Me. She would stand up there and testify about becoming pregnant when she wasn't married and how that basically just devastated her and pretty much ruined her life.
And her children were in the congregation, including?
Well, that's the point, you know. People could do the math. The tallest child, me, sitting there on the front row, her oldest daughter. And I don't think she ever really registered the shame that she was thinking she was doing a good thing by articulating the shame that changed her life, transformed it, brought her to a new beginning. But I don't think she ended up reflecting on the shame that it brought me, and I was just starting out my life. And I didn't realize for many, many years that shame had affected me so thoroughly. But I think any parent who's listening to this program instinctively knows now that you've got to be sensitive not just to your own emotions but to the ones that they then visit on your children.
Handle with
care.
So
a lot of my life. Yeah.
Did that leave you? Is that the thing that left you angry? Because you were angry. I mean, it's in the music. Maybe you still are. You have to tell us.
I don't know. Anger. I've learned is a way that we deal with hurt. That a lot of times anger is a way we protect ourselves. That hurt as an emotion is a very tender and fragile emotion. So a lot of times we put up a front like we're angry so that we can kind of protect ourselves. But the hurt that's underneath it is gone. I've forgiven my mother because, like they say, you know, you don't come with an instruction manual as a parent. She was 18 years old, and I think she just made some very, very typical mistakes that a young, self-centered teenager might make. And the hurt that I felt from that has healed mostly just by understanding. I don't have children of my own, but I do have a lot of compassion for the children out there in the world trying to make their way and realizing that a lot of them are acting out on the hurt that they maybe experienced when they were younger.
Yep. There's a lot we want to catch up on tonight, Michelle. We're with Michelle Schacht tonight. We'll go into this break listening to Gladewater from the new expanded release, Short, Sharp, Schacht, from Michelle Schacht's Mighty Sound Records. More Texas sons and daughters here making a beer run across the county line. Michelle Schacht, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Country music radio station louder than you are now. But it's all good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight to musician and now record company CEO Michelle Schacht. In the background is Disoriented, a British single that has not been previously released in the United States. But Michelle, I guess it's on your re-release of Short, Sharp, Shocked. Is that right? And where's it from?
That's right. It's on the second disc, the bonus disc that's got 21 tracks, most of them previously unheard over here at least, and many of them anywhere. This was a single that was released in England, and I suspect had my destiny not been crossed with polygrams at some point, this would have been more the tenor of my persona as it was presented.
Perspectives vanish now, there's only points of view.
In England, the way I was presented was different. I was this American curiosity, this waif, this vagabond. The story came out early about all my, you know, mental hospital incarceration and troubles with the, you know, just, it was like a persona was being created, and this single was going to end up amplifying it. But unfortunately, you know, the American label snatched me up and out came Anchorage, and I was off and running with a song about friendship.
How did you find out what was happening with the persona creation marketing business of the music industry? Was it clear to you where you were, how you were being packaged, where you were being pushed, or did it slowly envelop you?
It was exactly like we were saying before about instincts. I had a sense about certain directions that they were taking me. Matter of fact, one of the early things they told me as they brought me into the office was, you've got to go as far and as fast as you can as a young artist, because that's when you get the most attention and notoriety, and it's all pretty much downhill from there. And I was like, wait a minute, that is nothing like the way that life works. You should not be at your strongest, at your best. When you're young, you should get better and more developed as you mature. And so there were certain instincts that I had to kind of pull the reins back to not be this overnight sensation, this one-hit wonder, you know, this instant celebrity that they were looking to make me. I guess that's where the money and the profits lie, is in getting the quick hits when the artists are young and dumb. But
and one character and there. Write it all the way, write it maybe even into the ground.
Exactly.
But you reached out in another direction. Anchorage became a big song. If it wasn't what they were looking for, it was sure one that everybody heard on the radio in those days.
They had it in the back of their minds that that was going to be it.
Could you bring that back to us?
I had a collaboration with a producer named Pete Anderson, who I think really stood by me well. Matter of fact, we've come full circle, and we're going to probably go back in the studio again together. But he trusted my instincts, and that was the real benefit that I had.
This was a story of reconnecting with an old friend in a surprising way, and maybe, I don't know, you tell me, but maybe the song by which the greatest number of American listeners will know you even today, Anchorage.
It certainly, for the folks that were, you know, listening to radio, they didn't even have AAA format back then. It was kind of this adult contemporary, but it just really resonated. It struck a chord with a lot of women of my generation who, you know, that Robert Frost poem, Two Roads Diverged in a Yellow Woods, and I chose the one less traveled. And my friend Kelly chose maybe the more typical one. She got married and, you know, had children and kind of settled down and kind of, I think, was curious vicariously about my path, which was, you know, travel and adventure and living by my wits and
you wrote the letter to Dallas and it came back from Anchorage, and the rest we know. Can you sing that for us, Michelle Schacht?
I took time out to write to my old friend. I walked across that burning bridge. I mailed my letter off to Dallas. But her reply came from Anchorage. She said, hey girl, it's about time you wrote. It's been over 2 years, you know. My old friend, take me back to the days of the foreign telegrams and the all-night rock and rolling. Hey Shell, we was wild then. Thank you. Michelle, you know it's kind of funny. Texas always seemed so big, but you know you're in the largest state in the Union when you are anchored down in Anchorage. Hey girl, I think the last time I saw you was on me and Leroy's wedding day. Tell me something now. What was the name of that love song you played anyways? Yeah, I forgot how it goes. I don't recall how it goes. Down in Anchorage. Well, let's see now. Leroy got a better job, so he moved. And Kevin, he lost a tooth, but he started school, and I've got a brand new 8-month-old baby girl. I sound like a housewife. Hey, Shell, I think I'm a housewife. Hey, girl, what's it like to be in New York? New York City, imagine that. Now tell me something, what's it like to be a skateboard punk rocker anyway? Yeah, Leroy says, send a picture. Leroy says, hello. Leroy says, you keep on rocking, girl, you keep on rocking. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm going to be honest with you, Tom, it's not an easy thing to do these days, keep on rocking. People don't want you rocking. They want you to shut up. They don't want you rocking no boat. They want you to sit down and shut up. They say, we know we got problems in this country, Michelle Shock. We don't need you telling us about them. We all need to unify. We all need to agree. Yeah, we all need to unify and agree to shut up. Aw, damn. If I could have done it by now, I would. Hey, Shell, you know it's kind of funny. Texas always seems so big. But you know you're in the largest state in the Union when you are anchored down in Anchorage. Oh, you there in Anchorage. You keep on rocking. Do you hear me, Anchorage? Keep on rocking, girl.
Michelle Shocked with Anchorage. Wow, that is so great. I mean, it's got the girl-to-girl, woman-to-woman thing going on so strong, and then you manage to rag us all a little in the middle of it. Keep on rocking. Maybe it's not so encouraged right now. I'm curious how you're telling your story these days. I mean, it sounds like a Tom Robbins novel. This incredible picaresque. I mean, those early years when you know away from home and out of UT in Austin and on the road in California and hanging with MDC and the Dead Kennedys and back home and your mother. Getting you into the mental institution for 30 days until the insurance ran out. Homeless and on the road in Europe, this incredible story. Is it just reading your bio? It's an anti-cruise missile peace camp in Sicily, raped by a Green Party comrade. It's just a wild story. And then, of course, the almost legendary recording at the folk festival back in Texas of the English guy with his Sony Walkman who recorded you, I guess, completely casually, and it ended up as an album in England, unbeknownst to you. Do you still draw your energy from all this story? Are you in the middle of a different story now, Michelle Shock?
I think that's where I'm going to take you, Tom, is the way that story usually ends is then you met your prince, you got married, and you lived happily ever after. And as a 41-year-old woman recently divorced, the way that story goes is that, yeah, I had a different kind of adventure. I had an adventure much like my friend in Anchorage where, You try to settle down, your heart finds a home, and you try to make meaning of your life now that you've found, I guess consistency would be the word. And I have a lot of lessons that I learned from that experience that may not feel to some listeners as much of a dramatic arc as that of a vagabonding young woman in my 20s.
We'll take them anyway. But, share the lessons.
The main one that I learned is I'm so grateful that my sense of feminism was always a working class, you know, just like the song Anchorage talks about, feminism for me was always a tool for women who were in actively engaged relationships with men and needed a sense of empowerment that may not have come from their socialization, may not have learned from their mother how to be assertive, how to say, these are my needs and this is what I am going to expect from you. But rather, my experience was much like many of my generation and class. I was an enabler. I made so many things possible in that marriage that didn't work for me. And I'm so glad that I didn't put myself above my station, that I didn't become a voice or an authority on feminism, but rather made each and every one of the same mistakes that any woman in that situation would have made. And now, 10 years later, I am older and wiser for it. And I believe that because of feminism, I have the power to heal myself, to understand, much in the way that I now understand the mistakes my mother made. I'm able to forgive myself for the mistakes that I made in that relationship. And I think that's the real point at the end of it, is folks couldn't see the adventure that I was on, but they know from their own experiences at trying to find a place for their heart to have a home in this world and how things can sometimes go terribly awry. And so the adventure that I've come out of it with is just, now I, you know, I've learned some very valuable lessons and can set about the very noble project of the courage to follow my instinct, which is to forgive myself for being all too human.
I'm going to ask you more about that, but I want to put it against the backdrop of a really rocking love song, because you can sure do that too. I wish you'd play If Love Was a Train from us, and then we're going to come back with a whole passel of questions for you, Michelle Schell.
Oh, if love were a train, I think I'd ride a slow one. Oh, one that would ride through the night, making every stop, yeah. If love were a train, oh, I would feel no pain, and I would never get off. No, girls, listen to me, I'd never get off, You know, if love were a train, I think I'd ride me a long one. Ha! Hear me talking, I'm talking 50 boxcar long. Holy! Oh, what's the use? Most trains these days ain't got no engine, much less no caboose. Come on, girls, am I wrong or am I right? You know I'm right, yeah. She goes. Oh, if love were a train, I'd throw my body down on a track. Yeah. Yeah, I said if love were a train, I'd throw my body right down on the tracks. Oh, if love were a train, I would feel no pain as she rolls right down my back, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, but there's no Michelle Thomas, yeah. Love ain't no train, no. It's more like a bronking bull, yeah. Look out for what you wish for. The most you got's 15 seconds in that saddle. Oh, even if you manage to ride, you're all shaking up inside, and it's gonna be a long time, yeah. Said it's gonna be a long time. quite frankly, I could go on with that note all day long. Before you ride that train again, yeah. Ooh, yay. It's a song for both blues woman. If love were a train. All y'all blues women, sing along with me. Hidey, 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 hidey. Hidey, 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 ho. Hibbity, 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 hibbity. Ah, here she goes. She's coming in the station. Yeah, she's coming in the way I like it now. Tom, she's coming in the station the way I like it. She's coming in slow.
I think the train is in the station.
Been living the blues or what?
So feminist divorcee singing that song, one would say, well, she's done with a man, but she's not done with men. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, I got a new love thing. I got a new love thing, and I regret all those terrible things I just said about men, because this is a good love thing. And matter of fact, he told me the other side of it. This friend of his says, I think my wife's just died. He says, oh, yeah, what makes you think so? He says, well, you know, the sex is the same, but the dishes are piling up.
Oh, jeez, that's terrible. That's terrible.
It's really bad.
Oh, it's terrible, but it's good, like so much of what you do. Michelle Schock, hang on. We want to come back and talk about politics and born-again Christianity. Let's go out with Leaving Louisiana in the Broad Daylight. Michelle Schock.
I love that song.
Yeah, so do we.
Well, man, took to running with a traveling man.
This is On Point.
With a head in her hands, it's a sad case. She said, Mama, gotta go, gotta get out of here, gotta get out of town. I'm tired of hanging around, I gotta roll on between the ditches. It's just an ordinary story about the way things go round and round. Nobody knows but the highway rolls on forever. Traveling man, if she hadn't started taking those crazy chances. Well, now let me tell you about the traveling kind. It's everywhere it's been in such a very short time. You'll be long gone.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Michelle Schock. She's still making trouble 15 years after her breakthrough album, Short, Sharp, Schocked. It's out in expanded re-release now. We're listening here to Graffiti Limbo.
Lay down your burden. Lay down your care. The Holy Virgin, she's gonna greet you up there. With a big can of spray paint, yeah. And a big blank wall. And I can guarantee to you, there ain't no cops around at all. Graffiti Limbo.
There's Graffiti Limbo. And Michelle, that was a story taken from the newspaper headlines of a graffiti artist who died in police custody. It wasn't pretty. And it really wasn't a story of hope, at least as I hear it. And it leaves me wondering, you are now kind of famously a born-again Christian yourself. Would you write this song now?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it was this song that led me to my faith as it's currently practiced. I had kind of sublimated a lot of my own spiritual nature into political passions, and racism was one of the deepest ones for me. And so I finally decided enough, and I took the mountain to Muhammad. I went to an African-American congregation in South Central L.A., and, you know, I was just going for the music at first, but I tell folks I went one Sunday too often. And so for 10 years now, I've been a non-African-American in an African-American congregation.
Gosh, we've got too many riches here tonight. We want to hear a lot more from you, but we've got you there in the studio with your guitar, and we want to get one more song from you live, if you'd be good enough, Michelle Schacht. I love the LNN Don't Stop Here Anymore.
Oh,
could you play
that
for
song.
Us?
Yeah. Daddy set me down upon his knee, saying, son, you go to school, you learn your letters. Oh, don't you be no dusty minor boy like me. Well, I used to think my daddy was a black man with enough scrip to buy the company store. Now he goes to town with empty pockets, and Lord, his face is white as the February snow. I was born and raised at the mouth of the Hazard Holler, where the coal cars roll and rumble past my door. But now they stand in a rusty row of all empties, because the LNN don't stop here anymore. I never thought I'd live to learn to love the coal dust. I never thought I'd pray to hear those tipples roar. But God, I wish the grass would turn to money and them greenbacks would fill my pockets once more. Last night I dreamed I went down to the office. I was going to get my payday, yeah, my payday like I'd done before. But them old kudzu vines were covering over the doorway, and there were leaves and grass growing right up through the floor. Oh, I was born and raised at the mouth of the Hazard Holler. The coal cars roll, they rumble past my door. But now they stand in a rusty row all empties, because the LNN, she don't stop here anymore.
Shell-Shocked. And that is gorgeous. Our time
that's
is
a spooky song. I think that's good for Halloween.
Yeah, it is good for Halloween. And how I love that line. I used to think my daddy was a black man with script enough to buy the company store. That's just great. The coal miner's face there. You've come full circle with Short, Sharp, Shocked coming back out in this expanded form. In a way, I guess it must be like a clean slate act. What's your new compass setting? Where are you headed now? What next? You've had so many phases.
I have a cycle of songs I've been working on. I mentioned going back in the studio with Pete Anderson, who I had made Short, Sharp, Chalk with. Mm-hmm. He's not totally crazy about my approach, but I can't help it. It's what I do. I write in cycles, which means I don't write a song. I write 10 songs.
So what's the flavor of the next cycle?
The flavor of the cycle I've been writing is based on the theory that you know more Spanish than you think you do. So it's got a lot of kind of Spanglish and, you know, mixed use. And in some cases, it kind of makes fun of everyone who swept up and embraced the Buena Vista social club sensibility. Like, we were having such an ethnic experience, you know, when right here in our very own homeland, you know. Oh, well, I'll just leave that unspoken.
Don't get started on my man, Raikuda. No, you've got some Latin American heritage yourself.
Is well, right? my mom, but see, that's what I'm saying. We treat our own Mexican-American heritage as if it's if it's like taking out the garbage, you know? And we'll import exotic Latin culture and treat it like
it's right here,
deserving to be up on a pedestal. That's all I'm saying there. No, Ryan Cooter's heart is in the right place. I know it is. I'm just saying. Yeah, my mom was born in New Mexico, and the story I always heard was that my ancestors were conquistadors from Spain. And I'm like, come on, man. That's what you would say if you was a Mexican. Yes, right, we are noble conquistadors.
We've all descended from kings. Yes, we have all descended from kings. Michelle Schock, we're out of time and how we regret it, but it's been so wonderful having you tonight. Thanks a lot for joining us, and thanks for bringing the album back out on your own label.
Thanks, Tom. I think we covered a lot of ground. Happy Halloween, y'all, from the spooky, spiky, spunky Michelle Schock.
It's great having you. Thanks a lot for being with us. For more information on Michelle Schock and Mighty Sound Recordings, visit our website at onpointradio.org. Let's go out with Michelle Schock, Black Widow. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Time is red. Time is deadly. Time under glass. Time will tell. Time will tell. The tale of the widow who walks her way. Morning and night. Morning and dead. Morning and dead. Or did you lose him to a broom trapped in a corner of the room? Or was it under the foot of the marching black boot? The marching black boot.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beattie. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
Why in God's name would this happen? Why? She was just standing by the window when the blast came. All the windows of our house are broken too.
The more progress we make on the ground, the more free the Iraqis become, the more electricity is available, the more jobs are available, the more kids that are going to school, the more desperate these killers become.
I was startled by President Bush's comments, if I understood them correctly. It's not desperation that's growing among our enemies in Iraq. It's optimism and fearlessness.
We are committed to stay in Iraq, and we're not evacuating Iraq. We have to reduce the staff because we have to reduce the risks.
Yeah, every day when I went to work, I would see the flames on the way down, the flames back up, you know. I never thought it would burn up towards this area. I never thought it would get this far.
So much smoke has gotten to our lungs and stuff, you know, and it's made us, we want to come in here to get some fresh air, to get some rest and stuff. We've been mandatory evacuations.
I'm here basically to just work very hard to get more money to California so we can, you know, control this fire and also then rebuild the businesses, the homes of the people that have lost them.
The American economy is really getting back on path. Numbers that show that growth at 7.2, but in some ways even more importantly, that we're finally seeing some very sizable capital expenditures in this economy.
The mission accomplished sign, of course, was put up by the members of the USS Abraham Lincoln saying that their mission was accomplished. I know it was attributed somehow to some ingenious advance man from my staff. They weren't that ingenious, by the way.
The same sort of cloning research is taking place in Europe as is taking place here. It's likely we'll come to the same scientific conclusion. Whether or not we come to the same societal conclusion or not is yet to be known.
And there's a week, 4 car bombings, including one that targeted the headquarters of the Red Cross, rocked Baghdad Monday, killing at least 35 and wounding more than 200. Despite being the bloodiest day since the end of major combat operations, President Bush called the attack signs of the enemy's desperation. Senator Joseph Lieberman and other Democrats took exception to that characterization. The Red Cross announced it would scale back its presence in Iraq after the attack. The UN said today that it will do the same. Wildfires in Southern California char over 750,000 acres, destroy over 2,500 homes and killed 20 people, including one firefighter. Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger made his first trip to Washington to seek federal assistance for dealing with the fire. Treasury Secretary John Snow hails positive economic figures, which show a blistering growth rate of more than 7% in the third quarter. At a rare press conference, President Bush denies his staff was responsible for the mission accomplished banner he stood beneath when he declared an end to major combat operations in Iraq on the USS Abraham Lincoln in May. The White House later admitted it had made the banner, though it says it did so at the request of the Navy. And in an initial ruling, the FDA concludes that meat and milk from the offspring of cloned animals are safe to eat. We will also note that 10 U.S. soldiers died in Iraq this week, reports of 33 attacks a day. And there is a week, Jack Beatty.
Yes, it is. And you know, there are some good sort of news that's been pushed to the side. North Korea has agreed to multi-party talks thanks to pressure from the Chinese, but also from the Bush administration, which has taken a more moderate line toward North Korea. And Iran, there's also been some warm words from the State Department from Iran, which has agreed to open itself up to inspection of its nuclear facilities. Those are two elements of the axis of evil, at least, that where there seems to be some progress. But it's in the third one, the hell in Iraq, that gets all attention.
The idea of lots and lots and bundles of positive news being ignored artificially just kind of fell apart this week after it was lofted last week.
Yes, it really did. I mean, the news was just so awful. You mentioned it, the attacks. And as we're going into this weekend, CNN is reporting that there are leaflets on the streets of Baghdad warning of attacks on mosques and schools this weekend. President Bush, of course, on Tuesday said that more kids are going to school. That was one of the things he hailed. It's almost as if these terrorists are getting a checklist. He mentions the UN, we'll hit the UN. He mentions schools, we'll hit the schools. It's hard to, and then the president's statement that the worse things are getting, the better they're getting, or maybe the better they're getting. I'm not sure what the logic was there, but his people seem to regret it the next day. That was an unfortunate comment.
The idea that things are getting so much better that the enemy is desperate.
Yes.
Jack, for I don't know, weeks or months now, it seemed that the conversation about Iraq, there's been something kind of antiseptic, something kind of arm's length about it. It's going a little bit better or a little bit worse. Suddenly, it almost seems that the country needs an all-hands-on-deck consideration of what exactly is going on here. This is a lot of money and a lot of lives.
It really is. And as you mentioned, over a dozen attacks a day on U.S. Forces.
More than that now. We're reading 30-plus.
30-plus. The U.N. quitting. Doctors Without Borders pulling out. The Red Cross pulling out. This is a desperate situation, and no one seems to have any idea about how to deal with it, perhaps because it's the kind of thing that, in a certain sense, can't be dealt with. That is, it's got to run its course. The enemy is going to give up, or we're going to be successful in suppressing him. But
in the running of the course, a lot of decisions to be made about exactly how that course is run and where the United States sets its feet down along the way. It's just looking enormous right now, much to be considered and considered deeply there. We're not going to solve that one tonight, Jack, but it's sure looming large.
It does indeed, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for this weekend.
Lots of goblins out there, Jack. Happy Halloween.
Thank you. You too.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.